Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guests, Todd and Jesse Camp. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. With Columbia, Tennessee-based EnergizeHealth.com, you lose fat fast, simply, and naturally without restrictive exercise or cardboard, dry, tasteless food. Revolutionize your health with this proprietary 88-day science from John and Chelsea Jubilee. People report getting off medications and reversing ailments. Energy, mental clarity, and alertness go through the roof, look and feel many years younger and oftentimes unrecognizable. I know, I'm an alumnus and lost 70 pounds of fat with John and Chelsea and wouldn't have energy to do three shows a week without it. Hit the link in show notes for your free consultation and discount, money back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose but unhealthy fat. EnergizedHealth.com. And welcome to our People in News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we're talking to both Todd and Jesse Camp of the formerly and legendary Nashville Donaldson Bowl. As News Channel 5 Nashville put it, one thing about living in Nashville today, it feels like we are often saying goodbye to something that's been around for so long. This Sunday, May 14th, was the final day for a true Nashville institution. Bowling is just part of the love story of Jesse and Todd Camp. Me and my husband, we bowled all over the place. Jesse smiled. We actually met bowling in high school, Todd remembered. We were rivals. After 63 years, the story of the Donaldson Bowl is ended. Beyond that, the camp said some mainstays of the staff have died in recent years. Owner of the Crescent Bowling Company is selling the site to a real estate developer looking to build a new apartment complex in the space on Donaldson Pike. It was an honor to manage this place the last 11 years, said Todd. It was an honor to get to know the people. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. A sign inside the bowling alley says, it's one last smile in a place that's brought so many smiles over the last 63 years, said Todd. Todd and Jesse, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you for having us on.
My pleasure. So that was Sunday. Today's Wednesday. Are you still in Nashville?
No, sir. About a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, we moved to Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. So we made a commute for the last year and a half to 2 years to Donaldson Bowl 3 days a week, you know, just to keep it going as long as it went.
Wow. All right. Well, that is a lot of gas mileage and a lot of rubber on the road, but thanks for doing that. Are you both unicorns born and raised here?
Yes, born and raised in Nashville. Yes, sir.
So you've seen it all then. Okay. Well, I was told that you helped your high school bowling team excel to state championship matches, Todd. Is that true? Which school was that?
Yes, sir. I wonder where you heard that from. But anyways, yes, sir. Back in high school, I was a very good bowler, and so was my wife. And back at the time, whenever I was in high school, we made it to state. I bowled for Beach High School, and we made it and broke the TSSAA state record as a team back then. Of course, it's been broken since, but back then we had held the record, and that was in 2004.
Wow. All right. Scoot a little closer so you can see both faces in the frame. There you go. All you folks on Rumble, got to see these people. They're real.
Sure.
Now, Jesse, you said you bowled all over. What are some exotic places you bowled?
Gosh, you'd be better at answering this on Dirksley Challenge, but we bowled St. Louis. We went all kinds of different tournaments. We actually got recruited in college to bowl, so both of us bowled a little bit in college as well.
Which college was that?
Martin Methodist, which is now UT Southern.
Okay. Any exotic places for you, Todd?
Just nowhere out of the country. It was always in the United States, but many different states I've bowled in. Honestly, it's just one of those deals of I've bowled so many bowling alleys that they've all become one. and it's hard to really distinguish where I bowled and when I bowled. So it's all bowling to me at this point.
Well, one of the great things about Donaldson was that it was such a retro, at the time, obviously modern, but a classic bowling alley. And these days, there's the Lucky Strikes and there's the hotels that have the bowling alleys with all the neon and the restaurants and all the rest. Is there anyone in particular that stood out to you as a favorite when you got out of town for, you know, being from Nashville? Some people never leave Tennessee. Why would you? It's a great place. Is there any ones that stick out in your mind that was just an amazing bowling alley?
In all honesty, she's right. Donaldson Bowl was the best bowling alley. And it's just because, not because I managed it, but it was a Nashville staple. You know, people took their first dates there. People met their future spouses there. You know, you name it, and it went on at Donaldson Bowl. I mean, you know, you got to think 1960 is whenever it started.
Yep.
And from the time 1960 on, you know, I've had people come in that are in their 70s saying, I went here on prom night. So, you know, stories like that, it just, you can't top another bowling alley. Just can't give you those kinds of stories unless it's got the same amount of history to it.
And most bowling centers now are family fun centers. So Donaldson Bowl was kind of a dying breed, that it was just an old school bowling alley, not a family fun center. And that's kind of what made it special too. So it's just bowling.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, did you come across interesting characters like the kind we see in the movie Kingpin with Bill Murray and Randy Quaid, you know, these wild characters all decked out in their outfits and big hair and funny shoes?
Well, the funny thing is nowadays it's a cool thing to do for a group of friends to come into the bowling alley and they like to dress up as Kingpin characters. Now, don't get me wrong. There is actual characters in a bowling alley who are characters who are not dressing up, that you just are just, they're characters, they're polished characters, and they're that way their whole life. And we have those as well. So you have the ones who try to be that character, and then you have the ones who are that character.
The movie was only funny because it was true.
That's right.
So literally you have been there since 1960. America, Nashville, the world has changed quite a bit since then. Nashville was a very different place. What did you, and you weren't working there, you weren't born yet. What did you hear about the bowling business back then that you were looking out for when you became manager?
Well, whenever I took over, you know, it was an older lady had managed for quite a few years. And she had passed away just due to old age. And anyhow, so I got a phone call, just getting out of college, and they wanted us to come in and manage. So I took the job. And, you know, the whole thing with Donaldson Bowl was, at the time, it wasn't marketed as anything special. It was just marketed as a bowling alley. Well, I love history. You know, I always have. Through my father and my grandfather, they love history, so they passed it down to me through Nashville history. So anyway, I suggested, let's go with Nashville's oldest lanes as it's branded. Well, you know, not because of anything other than that's the fact. It was Nashville's oldest lanes, and nobody had acknowledged that until I had started managing 11 years ago. That's when we kind of put the brand on it, Nashville's oldest lanes.
And you saved.
So, and as she just said,
come a little closer to the mic, Jesse, so we can hear you. Come, just, yeah, scrunch in there. Yeah. Say it again.
She said, she saved the decor. We went to the back and got all the decor out that was original to the bowling center that had been stored away, covered in dirt, you know, just, it was a mess. And we pulled it all back out, cleaned it up, and hung it all back on the walls. The original signs, the things that were original to the center, we brought back out when we took over. And, you know,
the original scoring system.
Yes. And, you know, so it became a place to go, a destination more than just a bowling alley after I took over.
Kind of go back in time a little bit, like a place to go back in time, get out of the hustle and bustle of the city and feel like you're in 1960s, 70s Nashville.
You got it. Yes, sir. You
got experience.
It. That was a brilliant move. Back then, did it have actual people back there replacing the pins, or has it always been technologically advanced with the automated racks?
When it first started, it had the automated racks. By 1960, what they would call pin boys or pin hops, they were kind of a thing of the past at that point. You know, before the automatic pin setters, they had, like I said, pin hops or pin boys. And what they would do is they would set pins for so much per pin. That's how they got paid. So, you know, say the going rate was a quarter a pin, you get paid a quarter a pin every time you set a pin down.
But which it wasn't that.
It wasn't that at all. We had automatic since day one, 1960. But I will say this, those same machines are in there to the closing day. We're in there to the closing day. And those same machines had been worked on by the same guy. He started there as a pin hop in 1960, and he was there to the day it closed. And just last Sunday, and he's now in his 80s, and he started when he was 18 years old.
What's his name? I'm glad I asked that question. What's his name?
His name is James Huddleston.
Huddleston. Oh, that's amazing. So he is just as much of a personality as the stuff you got from the back.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah. What other technology did the alley grow up using for bowling that impressed you as it evolved, as the sport evolved?
Tell me about the first scoring system, how you had to keep score manually.
The first scoring system she's talking about, it was a projector system. Basically, you would have a lighted projector down in the pit area where you would sit and keep score, and you had film paper that was see-through, and basically you would set it on a projector on the table. You would write your score in with they would call it a grease pencil back in the day, or it was like a color pencil. And that way you could erase it and do another game. But what you would do is you'd write your score in mark by mark, and then it would project it up onto the ceiling right above where you was bowling on the tile so everybody could see it. You didn't have TV monitors. You didn't have animations. You didn't have any of that. You just had a pen or a pencil. You had a projector, and you had a plastic slip of paper, and you had to keep score on your own back when it started.
So you had to do math.
You had to do math, yeah. So you can't see this. I can. My producer, Steve, is kind of jumping up and down over there. Steve, you want to open your mic? Did you used to do that job or something? What are you pointing at your head for?
We bowled in middle school and high school, and specific middle school, we did a little bit of the teams on Saturday mornings, and yes, that's the type of scoring we did back in the early 70s.
1870s?
Yes, sir.
1970s. Ferndale, Washington.
All right, back to you guys. So your lanes always got praise for being in good shape. What was the most, I guess, was that the most expensive part of running an alley? Lane maintenance?
Not necessarily, no, sir. The most expensive part would be probably the finding parts for the older machines. That would be the most challenging because as the machines get older and older, it was harder to find the parts to replace on them. But, you know, to maintain the lanes, you would have to run, sweep them, which you'd strip them, which means you'd clean them off, no oil. You'd clean them, you know, just down to the floor surface, and then you would oil them. And, you know, we were known as the hardest shot in Nashville. You would have bowlers that would come in that were used to getting easy scores, and then they would come into Donaldson Bowl, and you'd have some guys walk out with 10 bowling balls, and they couldn't find a shot some days. It was so hard.
Wow, that's interesting. So, yes. So I went through a lot of reviews, and there was too many to just get the perfect one, but Ivan S. from Long Beach, California said on Yelp, "The place closed at 9 p.m., but they stayed open for us longer. They showed us A++ service and the employees care for customers. I would come back here next time I am back." Well, sorry, Ivan, but can't do that. But did you often stay open longer than the posted times?
Yeah.
Yes, sir, we did. We were the type of bowling alley that we tried our best to, you know, make people happy. I mean, you know, like it wasn't rule after rule after rule. Oh, it's 10 o'clock. We got to shut the doors at 10 o'clock. You know, we were more of a, you know, we tried our best to be human.
And treat people like we want to be treated. And we helped a lot of people. Like we had a blind group that would come in on Thursdays that we would put up special rails for them so that they could bowl. We also had a New Horizons Handicap League that would bowl on Sundays that we would help them. And then we'd have United Cerebral Palsy people come. So, I mean, we always try to go the extra mile to help people and let them bowl and have a good time.
Oh, that's so nice. That I'm going to miss that for sure. In the town I grew up in, Napa, California, the bowling alley competed with the roller rink. In Seattle, where I moved, the same thing. The bowling alleys are still there. Even the movie theaters are gone in Napa. And it was next door to the Skate King. Something about bowling lasted the 70s and 80s and into today. What do you think it is?
Well, one thing I've always heard is bowling is a blue-collar man sport.
It's a lifelong sport that anybody can do at any age.
Yes. Bowling is very affordable as well, usually anywhere you go.
Compared to shooting, absolutely. The cost of bowling for an hour versus, 500 rounds, yeah, not a good deal. Yes.
Even though we closed from Tuesday to Thursday, we had $2 games.
$2.
So you can go bowl three games for $6. So, it was very affordable.
Yeah, good family entertainment compared to, say, the Titans or even the Grizz. How did you get involved in Donaldson in the first place? Obviously, you loved it, stayed there a long time, but how did you get involved from just a guy who liked to bowl there to actually this was your place of business?
Well, being born and raised in Nashville, I was already familiar with Donaldson. And, when I got out of college, we both went to college on a bowling scholarship. And anyhow, when we moved back to Nashville after we left Pulaski, in college, and we bought a home up there, and the position came available when the lady had passed away that used to run it. So the owners had called and asked if I would like to run the bowling center. And of course
they called
yes, sir. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. They did. Somehow they had heard that I was looking for a job and they needed somebody. And so they called and left a voicemail one day, and I got back a hold of them, and the rest was history.
And were you two already married, or did this all come about at the Lanes?
We were already married, yes, sir. Okay. Yes. So,
but bowling together there often?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. We bowled there together a lot. Of course, we worked there together. So it was Donaldson Bowl was a big part of our life for over a decade.
We've been together since high school, and we actually met at a bowling alley, surprisingly enough. And we've been together since high school. We went to college, bowled together, moved to Nashville, and then somehow ran a bowling alley. So bowling's been a big part of our life.
All right. The couple that bowls together stays together. A bowling and family entertainment center that's been in business for 50 years in the Hudson Valley is currently on the market for $3.75 million and has the potential to be a successful new venture for someone with the right business smarts. The ad says, it doesn't sound like you guys are the only ones going through the transition period right now.
I think the thing about Nashville is financially, it was making enough money to be successful. Donaldson Bowl was still doing very well even to its last week, to its last day, So it's just Nashville as a city changed. It wasn't the bowling alley. The bowling alley could have been successful for the next two decades, but, the city unfortunately kind of shoved it out. And, as that shoved out many different other landmarks like that.
And we struggled with staff. A lot of our staff had been there for years. And Bubba, he was the mechanic who worked under Jim. And during COVID time, he got real sick and he lost his leg. So he was the one that was supposed to kind of take Jim's spot when Jim retired. But unfortunately, his career ended early and he wasn't able to come back. And then Jim, being the age that he is, his wife's got dementia and stuff. He had to go to part-time and it kind of left us without a mechanic. Mm-hmm. And being those old machines the way they are, not anybody can work on them. So we lost a mechanic, and that was vital to the bowling business to keep it running. So that hurt us a lot right there. And then a couple of our other employees, one that was Todd's right-hand person, he passed away from pancreatic cancer. And then the lady that ran our snack bar, she retired. So we found ourselves really short-handed. And I think that's one of the main reasons why the owners went ahead and sold it.
And the neighborhood changed a lot in 60 years, obviously. And so I guess that wasn't helpful, or was it, and ultimately hurt you because of the kind of folks that moved in, maybe
even
hipper folks that don't bowl?
even though a lot of the newer people that moved to the area love Donaldson Bowl because they love the vintage and the experience of the place. So like you said, we were doing great business. It's just when you have developers come in offering tons and tons of money for a place, and I mean, it's hard to say no to, I guess.
Yeah. Was your alley a hangout of Nashville celebrities?
Oh my goodness, yes. That's one of the funnest parts about the job that I enjoyed is I would get calls. You never know what you would get. And people wanted to do music videos, photo shoots. I mean, we had the show Nashville film there, American Pickers.
Over the years, it's been I've heard stories. Jim, the mechanic in the back, told me everybody from Sinbad had been in. Some of the wrestlers had been in. You know, you name it. Country music artists.
Jelly Roll wanted to come do one of his videos, but unfortunately, that was during COVID and we weren't allowed to do it. But I love Jelly Roll.
Any celebrity weddings or photo shoots or anything that would be?
We actually had a fella and his wife, Tom Grant. He used to be a local guy on in country music. He was like I'd say an MC, and he actually renewed his wife. They renewed their wedding vows together at Donaldson Bowl after 50 years, I think it was, 1 year. And
is it like a little 50s sock hop type of deal where they dressed up? And like, we'd always go the extra mile and do what, try to cater to whatever anybody wanted. So, I mean, it was a fun place with just a lot of memories.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very fun, it will be remembered as fun. I'll put it like that. You know, everything went over really well, and it was a fun place.
And your sister centers, which were owned by the same company, were Madison Bowl, Melrose Lanes, Inglewood Bowl, and West Bowl. And they're all closed, but were once also favorites in Nashville, too. How did you outlast them?
To answer that question, I think that, you know, a lot of it had to do with
location,
the neighborhood. Sometimes the neighborhood changes would run some of them out. And Donaldson just, it held on. You know, that's a good question. I don't necessarily know why Donaldson was the last, but it just held on. And, you know, with it got like its second breath, I feel like. And I feel like we had a lot to do with it by the newer people, the newer crowd coming in. And they knew, hey, this is the oldest bowling alley in Nashville. So, you know, let's support it. Let's make sure and go there and bowl. And, you know, I feel like it got its second breath, which gave it another decade or so to keep going.
Yeah, I think you're right. So if you had to say there was a single factor or maybe two that made you decide to close, it was the large dollar amount for development and
lack of losing the best employees. The employees were the blood of the business.
Yeah.
You can't replace someone who's been there like Jim from day one, and then Bubba, who'd been there 40 years, and Cheryl's been there over a decade, and Steve was there for a decade. When you lose those, the blood of your business, if you can't replace them. And then with Nashville changing the way it is, everybody wants at least $20 an hour, and they don't have nearly the work ethic these other people did, and they don't have the customer service like they did, and they don't enjoy it. It hurt.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And just yesterday, the Palladium Bowling Center closed its doors for the final time, leaving the city of Albany, New York, which played an important role in the development of pro bowling, without an alley, torn down to make room for an apartment complex. Also, for bowling enthusiasts in the capital region, Albany is the capital of New York, the loss of Palladium is a sign of the times as more and more bowling establishments disappear from the scene. Beginning in the late 1950s and running through the 80s, there were literally dozens of bowling centers each in Albany, Schenectady, and Troy. So this is actually a phenomenon that's happening not just in Nashville, not just Tennessee, but everywhere. Do you have
I feel like my thought on that, sir, is I feel like that for now, the trend is to put those apartments where Donaldson Bowl once sat, and everybody's, you know, fine and good with that. But I feel like down the road, 25, 30 years from now, people will look back, and I hate to say it, but this is just a fact, when those apartments deteriorate and those apartments, you know, are lackluster at that point, they'll wish the bowling alley never went anywhere. Yeah. And by that time, it would have been pushing 100 years old, and they'll say, man, we could have had a bowling alley here in the city of Nashville at 100 years old now.
Just like the old ballpark.
So, you know, I think the bowling alley will ultimately mean more in time than a random set of apartments.
I think you're right. Especially in that story there, you know, since the 50s. So those apartments are nothing, but a bowling alley had history, what you've just been describing here in town. What did COVID do to most of these bowling alleys? I mean, it's a close quarters indoor sport where everyone shares shoes and fingers in same holes. Did the hypochondriac era lose a lot of fans for bowling?
Our clientele changed quite a bit. I will say that.
How so?
A lot of people, I guess, were just nervous about having to wear rental shoes and use the same bowling balls. And so our regulars that were there prior to COVID, it took a while for them to come back.
So. Yeah, no fun in a mask either.
No, sir. We had to work in masks at one point. And man, it was just, I'll be honest with you, some days it's just, you don't even want to go to work because the mask was so bad, you know? And I mean,
it ruins the fun part, the interaction. Like, I don't know what it is about wearing a mask, but I couldn't hear people either. And then you're behind glass. You lost the interaction and the fun atmosphere because people, you know, come together and have fun. Well, COVID separated people, so the fun kind of was lost during that time.
Yeah, and there you are making your approach to the line. You roll the ball, you hit the 10, and they all go down, and you turn around, and you got a big smile on your face, and nobody can see it. So it kind of takes away the whole visual of a good game. So let me ask you this. So as a business, the leagues must have been a huge part of your consistent revenue, just talking dollars and cents here. Did the leagues go away too?
During COVID for a little while, we did have some that came back. But then again, you had half of them masked people, other half didn't want masked people, and it clashed. It caused controversy, and it wasn't a fun environment anymore, like everywhere else during that time.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be PC and BC before COVID and after COVID, or I guess AC. So Siebel, which has been in operation for 60 years, will be closing their doors. The historic Siebel Bowling Alley in Pacifica, California, announced it will be closing May 31st. So that's a week from today. It's a bad month for historic alleys, I guess we could say. And I understand the owners, after 60 years, want to cash out and retire. But it's a shame that no one could step up and keep it going and running it, it said in the San Francisco Chronicle. So have you heard of just this domino effect of just coast-to-coast bowling alleys going, or are these kind of one-offs and, you know, maybe they were just a little too old, or like you lost the older, better employees and it was just time? What are you seeing in the American landscape of bowling alleys? I obviously pulled out three very historic cases and yours, which happened to be closing right this very minute, but is this going to be a trend, or is it maybe just as strong as it's always been, just a few have to go?
Well, I hope not.
I think, sir, to answer that question, I think the best way to answer it is, for a long time, the old school All-American bowling alley is a thing of the past in general, unfortunately, but because it's trending toward family fun centers where you have go-karts and putt-putt golf and laser tag, you know.
All in one type of entertainment.
They're looking for a whole thing to go do, almost like an amusement park versus a bowling alley. You know, nowadays bowling just as a sport and as a recreation has lost its interest, unfortunately. I mean, you know, that's the best way to put it. You know, that's what we were, though. You know, we were old school bowling. You do your bowling, you drink your beer, you'd order your cheeseburger. We had two or three claw machines, a video game, and, you know, we were the last of a dying breed in Nashville, unfortunately.
Yeah, for sure. So I have this question for you. I was talking to a bar owner on Broadway And he said that Bud Light was his number one selling beer until they made this marketing blunder and forgot their fans. And it went literally to zero sold, literally zero. Had to call the distributor and tell them to come and get it all and take it. And they did. I assume bowling alleys make profits from selling food and drink. You were just talking about the cheeseburgers. More than, say, renting the lanes even, because, you know, it's not very, it's not very expensive. Did you see a drop off and trend down of alcohol sales from bowlers, not just Bud Light's problems, but from overall consumption down in America over your 15 years there?
Honestly,
beer
no,
was
sir.
Always a seller.
Yes. Beer was, I mean, the best way to word it, beer was bowling. I mean, you know, they came there, it's a bowling alley, but beer was bowling at this point. I mean,
before they could even get their game in, what type of beer do you have? They were already like wanting their beer.
And hey, it didn't matter what kind of beer it was. I mean, it didn't matter if it was Bud Light. I mean, they didn't care. They just wanted a beer to go with a bowling game. Yeah.
Beer and bowling. Did you happen to see a trend down in Bud Light during this little phenomenon or not even?
Hey, we heard some people say, oh, not going to drink that no more. Give me something
else.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. And so you actually were in a community. And so Southern Hair, owned by Roy Young, is also closing his salon right next door to you. And that business has operated since 1971, when I was born. You any idea what's going to happen to Roy?
Going to retire and I guess live the good life.
Yeah, we haven't spoke to him since. He used to come in and bowl some, and I haven't seen him in quite a while. But I suppose she's right. You know, I guess he's just going to retire and just live a good life, I guess.
Yeah. All right. No more cutting hair. All right. So the bad guys of the story, I guess you could look at it that way, or you could say the good guys, depending on your perspective. The Pizzuti Company announced its first Nashville-based multifamily development at the Donaldson Bowl site along Donaldson Pike, replaced with a 154-unit development. That's what's going to stand soon on top of the memories that you guys have had for 60 years.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah. To answer you, well, you didn't really ask a question, but you were just you were stating what's going to happen. So to add on to that,
a couple of them came in,
yes,
and we asked them what their plans were, and I knew they were going to build an apartment complex, but they bought the bowling center with all the contents on the inside, and so we wanted to know what are they going to do with all that stuff, and they're still in like the, I guess, planning stage. I want to be able to use a lot of that decor we had that he saved in their clubhouse or in their lounge. And he even wanted us to teach him how to run a couple of those lanes. And so I don't know if maybe they're going to try to put a couple lanes in or not, but I know the community would love to see that. So if they listen to this, then please put a couple lanes in.
And but, I will add to this. You know, they did come in one day while we wasn't there and talk to one of our good friends, which is an employee. His name is Michael. And they told him, you know, he said, I'm going to miss this place. He said, you know, I've known it since I was a kid. He went to kindergarten with me and he worked there with us. Well, anyway, so he was born and raised in Nashville. So he said, I'm really going to miss this. And they told him, well, it's progress. Well, in my opinion, progress is only progress when it's progress for everyone. It's only, they were speaking progress for themselves, but progress would be progress for people in the past, people in the future, and people now. So in my opinion, if they were to put in some lanes, then that might help with the progress for the people of the past.
That loved it.
That's very well said. So the former owners, the Crescent Bowling Company, since 1960, after operating five bowling alleys across the city beginning in 1942, the Crescent Bowling Company is ready to move on to their next endeavor. What is their next endeavor?
I don't really know, sir. Honestly, the two brothers, they haven't really spoke on it. They said they're just going to keep working. That's the only thing they've told me. So they're both good guys, and they're both, you know, very nice fellas, and they've treated us good over the years, and they just say that they're going to keep working. So
are they Nashville natives, or they been around?
They are, yes sir.
What are their names?
Robert and David Balch.
Bolt. And then do their parents go way back as well? Or they've been here for generations? Civil War veterans? Yes, sir.
They actually were, they started as the Crescent Amusement Company way back over 100 years ago. And so, you know, their great grandfather and grandfather and dad, you know, it's a whole family business.
Okay.
They used to be into movie theaters, bowling alleys. They own several properties. So they're always working on something.
Is this their last operating entity at the moment, or do they still have other things going?
They have other things going as far as I know, but this is the last operating bowling center.
Yeah. Okay. And the Donaldson neighborhood, with its strategic location and important place in the community, offers an excellent opportunity to develop another project in a city that's so meaningful to us. That's what the new owner said. The development is expected to open in 2025. So what do you think the future of the Donaldson neighborhood is, whether they put a couple lanes in this new complex or not? How about the surrounding area? Is it just going to completely change its demographic, or is it going
it
to?
It already has. Like, when we go up there, we made the drive 3 days a week. Every time we went up there, something had changed. It's almost, for us that was born and raised there, it's almost unrecognizable. I'm directly challenged as it is, but now when everything changes, like, it just doesn't look the same. It's sad. Like, all the old businesses, there's not many of them left at all. All you see is apartment complexes or new restaurants, and everything's new.
Yeah, I'll have to tell you, as a guy who just moved here from Washington State, Nashville needs a better city planner, because they're not really thinking ahead in terms of a lot of infrastructure. It's going to start looking like Buenos Aires, where it's just a big sprawl of commercial and residential all together. So hopefully somebody figures this out before it's too late. There is one place, I don't know if you know this, but you said you liked history. It's inside the White House that is actually particularly high in demand. And it's a place where folks go to bowl. An absurd number of people are visiting the Harry S. Truman Bowling Alley. In January alone, 1,100 people went there, according to the most recent White House visitor logs, the one we're allowed to see. In December, 1,425 people visited. That averages out to about 45 bowling alley guests per day, compared to like 759 guests visited the bowling alley for the entire year of 2014 when Obama was there. I guess the Biden White House has also used the bowling alley as a form of soft diplomacy with lawmakers, inviting congressional members and senior Hill staff to bowl nearly every week. At least 16 House members and one senator have done so this year, according to an administration official. Another 10 members were invited but declined. I don't know why I throw that in there, but about 450 Hill staffers have bowled. So my point is, maybe bowling is really not going out of style like the developers think in terms of renting apartments, and they should add bowling alleys to the neighborhood because people seem to like it.
Well, I feel as if in the new development in Donaldson, if they would emphasize, you know, the bowling center, and of course, they're going to keep some of its history, they say, in its lounge, and they're going to keep the old sign out by the road, is what they say. So I feel like if they were to add in actually some bowling lanes, it would lessen the wound that
they created.
I see. Well, that was actually going to be my last question, is what's going to happen to the awesome vintage sign?
It is going to stay as far as we know.
It better stay.
So it'll point to no opportunities. It'll be a good photo shoot, but won't really point towards anything that you can do with it. Okay. All right. Sort of like the big green or big pink elephant in Seattle. It's like, well, there's no car wash there. But
as far as that sign goes, there's been so many photographs, so many paintings. I mean, you name it. And that sign has been the subject of a lot of different things over the years. It's a famous landmark at this point.
And didn't Elvis bowl there?
I haven't heard that one, but if so, then you've taught me something.
Okay. All right. I'll spread the rumor. What the heck? Well, what's next for Jesse and Todd?
Well, we now are we're here now where we own the Kayfabe Cave. I'm a huge wrestling fan. I have been all my life. And kayfabe is an old term. Do you know what kayfabe is?
No, tell me.
Kayfabe is a term, an old wrestling term, and it's to make a work believed by everyone. Well, anyways, you know, in wrestling, obviously it's not fake, but it's fixed. And so they, kayfabe was the art of keeping it from the common person is what it was, the work from the common person. So here we're a vintage toys and collectibles store. So we bring toys to life. It's a play on words. Mm-hmm. And so we're in Pulaski, Tennessee, and we're running our very own store now. And we opened it in October of 22. And that's where we're at now.
We're going to be doing it full time now. And hopefully it does well to support our income from the loss of the bowling alley.
Yeah. Well, your commute is a lot shorter now. So that's good news.
That's true.
Yeah. Yes, sir. So when we carry vinyl records, wrestling memorabilia, Funko Pops, you name it, man. We got all kinds of fun, vintage, cool stuff in here. So, you know, if you get a chance, come down and visit us.
Very cool. Do you have a website? We'll put it in the show notes. Tell everyone where they can go to find out more about you and see your shop.
Well, that's on Facebook. It's at Kayfabe Cave. We're on Instagram as Kayfabe Cave. And we got a website. It's www.kayfabecave.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for keeping Nashville, Nashville for so many years and all the good work. We really appreciate you. And Jesse, do you have any social that people can go and check out?
No, but I was going to say, if you can get us tickets to go to that bowling alley in Washington, we'll be there. We haven't been to that one yet.
You'd have a better chance with Marsha Blackburn or any of the senators to get into the White House than me, but I'll keep it in mind if I can. I will.
Now, that would be the most exotic place I've ever bowled.
I agree. All right. Well, thank you very, very much for coming on with us.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. Y'all have a good day.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Harvey Durham Health Insurance Agency is the trusted independent health insurance agency that you can depend on for all your health insurance coverage needs. He's great because he doesn't look at health insurance as sales. He looks at it as helping people and doing the best he can to solve your current long-term care, disability, and Medicare supplement needs, even pets. I know, I'm a client, and so is my lab, Caroline. Over 30 years of insurance experience behind every policy, give Harvey a call at 731-727-9242 or email him at harveydurham@harveydurham.com and tell him Steve and Steve at Mill Creek View sent you. I don't understand how you ever did without me.
I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees. Well, we will see how Nashville does without Donnie Bowl.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what'd you think of our guests, Todd and Jesse?
Another one bites the dust because another upset of apartment complexes are coming in to take over another landmark. Steve, my township of Linwood is being transformed by the brainiacs who want boxes at every corner. And it sounds like Nashville is caving in to the same mentality as everywhere else, New York. They want these boxes that go up. They're butt ugly. And, we're going to look at all these beautiful old buildings. I was really enjoying that interview. Just a couple of good old folks. And thank you for bringing them on, Steve, and reminding us that sometimes just good old family fun is what's really needed.
I look forward to going to visit them in their shop and check that out. And they've been around a long time. His dad and grandfather are Nashville natives too. So they've been around since the 1800s. So there's plenty of folks to introduce me to get on this show and record their stories just like that. So I'm excited about that. And did you realize, Steve, that this is, well, May 20th, 2022 was episode number one. We had 25 in Washington. This is 96 or 97 in Tennessee, depending on what you do with our special event from Sunday. And we'll have to do a best of Steve and Steve for number 100 coming here very soon.
Yep.
That would be next last day of May, Wednesday, May 31st show with, let me check. Oh, fun. Miss Z Van Fleet, an immigrant from China who as a child had lived through Mao's Marxist Cultural Revolution. that won't be depressing at all. Well, seriously, here. Though, you she's won't here. Want to miss that one. Number 100. Yeah, she's here. So it has a happy ending. We hope, as America goes. But, okay, that's next week. If the creek don't rise, the Mill Creek, and nobody cancels, knock on wood, or unless producer Steve releases My Amazing Adventure from this last Sunday and Mr. John Rich's of Big and Rich fame at his house and its own episode, and then she won't be number 100, but still a good one. Steve, did I tell you what I sat down with interviews with Kyle Rittenhouse and Lee Greenwood and John Rich and a whole bunch of folks this last weekend, and you're editing it and it's going to be released when?
It's going to be released soon. It's in the editing. I'm hoping that Friday I will put them all up on the interweb.
Good. Gorgeous house in Nashville. Super nice guy. I can't believe I got to go. Anyway, look for that on Rumble and iTunes or wherever you like to listen to us. You can see clips on Twitter as well.
Well, Steve, you had to be big and you had to be rich. You're one of those two or both. So you got to go.
Well, big wasn't there, but Mr. Rich was. And he has a guitar-shaped swimming pool you can see from space. You can duck, duck, go that. So music has been very, very good to him. All right, back to the show. Everyone tells me they love your radio voice, producer Steve. So do me a favor, in your best game show voice, count off 14 seconds for me. Ready? Go.
1001, 1002, 1003, 1004, 1005, 1006, 1007, 1008, 1009, 1010, 1011, 1012, 1013, 1014.
You know what just happened in those 14 seconds?
No.
U.S. debt just added another $1 million. $1 million, that's $6.17 billion a day, or $2.252 trillion a year. Do you know how many U.S. taxpayers there are?
No, there's 330 million individuals that live in America.
Yeah, about half. There were 154,094,555 individual returns filed last year. So that's $14,600 a year for each of us who pay. Wait until interest rates go back up. Ouch. By the way, that's just what we all, or at least we all that pay taxes, owe on the new debt owed every 14 seconds. We owe $207,664 each on the old debt as of 14 seconds ago. So that's not good. Where's that go? Nowhere good, like to salaries of psychopath, sociopathic idiots like this. Clip number one.
Just came to my mind, and I am going to zip my lips.
That is Democrat Nebraska State Senator Michaela Kavanaugh, who has been drinking the woke Kool-Aid of insanity.
Oh, yes.
But trans people belong here, and she loves trans people and whatever else. I didn't quite
get thought the, Nebraska was supposed to be a little more red than that.
You got the memo. She didn't. Or this guy. Remember the highest paid federal employee ever was Dr. Fauci? This is what getting paid more than the president got us. Clip number two.
I think the intensive care has improved. We very, very readily would put people on mechanical ventilation when we found out through clinical experience it might have been better just to make sure we positioned them properly in the prone or supine position and not necessarily intubate somebody so readily, which might have actually caused more harm than good. We learned that as we got more experience.
Yeah, he learned that. Actually, Fauci, you are behind the mastermind crime of the century of killing more people than World War II ever thought to.
But he got paid for it. We said that early ventilation in New York City during the pandemic killed many people. We were accused of spreading conspiracy theories. This stupidity and lack of emotional control made the pandemic so much worse. It led to censorship and terrible decision-making. And yes, it was responsible for the deaths of a lot of people. And we did it for free. Didn't cost taxpayers a dime listening to you and me. But it's not just bureaucrats. I have to seriously think of my vote for next year if this guy keeps talking like this. Clip number three.
To put a warning on or something on just that particular vaccine, but I certainly would have paused it and gotten front page news all over the world, and then people don't want it, and it probably even affects the others, because, you know, there's a big situation with a lot of people don't want to take the vaccine. Well, this played right into their hands, and they want me to do public service messages and everything about everybody taking the vaccine. And look, I guess in a certain way, I'm the father of the vaccine, because I was the one that pushed it. You know, to get it done in less than 9 months was a miracle. Fauci said it would take 3 to 5 years. He thought it was something that just wouldn't be that effective because it would take so long to get. I pushed the FDA like they have never been pushed before. I wouldn't exactly say they're in love with me. They have never. This is a very bureaucratic organization. I pushed them like they've never been pushed before, and that's why we have it. When they did the pause on Johnson & Johnson, I thought that was a very, very stupid thing to do.
Yeah, you don't get my vote. I don't trust that piece of human waste with one. Anyway, I won't say anything more. I might alienate some of our listeners, Steve.
Well, he says I'm the father of the vaccine because I'm the one who pushed it. So if he's going to own it, he's going to own it in November 2024, unless he figures out a way to get out of it. But way back in August last year, Tucker saw this coming, and Trump is helping them do it. Tucker Carlson, Democrats are trying to shift blame about the COVID-19 vaccine to Trump. Tucker Carlson exposes the side effects of the COVID-19 vaccine and how Democrats are now blaming Trump. The vaccine is Donald Trump's doing. We learned this week from Democrats in Congress. They announced that shocking news. An investigation by the Coronavirus Subcommittee found, as Politico put it, that the Trump administration pressured the Food and Drug Administration to authorize the first COVID-19 vaccines on an accelerated timeline. That's exactly what he just said. Clip number four.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Well, they finally got Big Orange. You were starting to think it could never happen. How could it happen? Once you accuse a man of racism and fascism and sexism, embezzlement, perjury, sex crimes, mental illness, treason, the last of which, by the way, is a death penalty offense, let us remind you, and then you impeach him twice on related grounds, and after that you send the FBI to his home to seize a handwritten welcome letter from Barack Obama, which turns out to be a state secret, possession of which is a serious felony. After you do all of that, and they have, you wouldn't think there'd be a lot left to accuse the guy of. You'd think they'd have run out of sins. Oh, but no. It turns out there's one left, and it's the big one. The crime of all crimes. An offense so diabolical, so morally repugnant, so contrary to the laws of God and nature, that once revealed to the public, Donald Trump is done forever. He will never again darken the door of American democracy. He will slink back in shame to his lair off the 5th tee to prepare for his well-deserved punishment. We won't see him again until sentencing. That's how bad this is. What, ladies and gentlemen, did Donald Trump do? We can now tell you. Donald Trump created the COVID vaccine. He did that himself and on purpose, with malice aforethought. The vax is Donald Trump's doing. We learned that this week from Democrats in Congress. They announced that shocking news. An investigation by the Coronavirus Subcommittee found, as Politico put it, that the Trump administration pressured the Food and Drug Administration to authorize the first COVID-19 vaccines on an accelerated timeline. Following this, an accelerated timeline. They didn't even fully test the stuff. That's not science. Donald Trump doesn't do science. So they just handed this stuff out to people, citizens, recklessly. in the words of South Carolina Congressman James Clyburn, Donald Trump assaulted our nation's public health institutions with this poison, this so-called vaccine, and in doing so, quote, undermined our nation's coronavirus response. That's what Trump did. And here's the worst part. No one knew Trump was doing it.
Well,
missed that voice yet? Mickey Mouse on laughing gas, if you ask me.
Yeah.
May 15th, 2020, Fox Business. Trump launches Operation Warp Speed for coronavirus vaccine. Operation Warp Speed is a massive scientific, industrial, and logistical endeavor. Trump described the administration's plan as a massive scientific, industrial, and logistical endeavor unlike anything our country has seen since the Manhattan Project or World War II, with the intent to rapidly develop and distribute a vaccine with help from the U.S. military and world-renowned doctors and scientists. We'd love to see if we can do it prior to the end of the year, the president said. We think we're going to have some very good results coming out very quickly. Yep, he did that and gave us Fauci and Burks and lockdowns and people getting fired. Let's not forget that, okay?
Thank you.
HHS Secretary Alex Azar called the operation one of the greatest scientific and humanitarian accomplishments in history. But he couldn't do it without help. Democratic voters went right along with him. Democrats in January 2020, fine the unvaccinated, 55%. Lock unvaccinated at home, 60%. Send unvaccinated to quarantine camps, 45%. Take children from unvaccinated parents, believe it or not, 30%. Fine and imprison critics of vaccine, 45%. Democrats wanted to put you in prison. The unvaccinated will never forgive or forget. Here's a news article. The unspoken warning in the Durham report, American Self-Government is Collapsing, by John Daniel Davidson, May 18, 2023, The Federalist. In the 306-page report from the special counsel John Durham is not necessarily the FBI's scandalous crossfire hurricane investigation of the Trump campaign in 2016, but that the egregious abuses of power detailed in the report cannot be remedied, quote, absent a curing of the corrupted hearts and minds of law enforcement and intelligence agencies, the article says. It's easy to look at the Durham report and conclude that the problem is just with a handful of bad apples in federal intelligence agencies, but the rot goes much deeper than that. People like Comey and Brennan and the legions of corrupt agents and bureaucrats under them were produced by an American society that has lost its way, that has become unmoored from the morality that sustains our system of government and inculcates virtue in our citizenry. New rules and regulations won't be enough, nor will it be enough to defund or disband the FBI. Unless we rediscover the moral virtue necessary for self-government, we will descend bit by bit into tyranny. And one day we will look back at the Durham report and understand that it wasn't just an indictment of the FBI, but an indictment of us all and a harbinger of the end of our republic. Wow. Remember that republic? We pay $15,000 more per each and compounding fast. What's up, Steve?
Steve, that's a mouthful. All I can all say right. is that's a mouthful.
So I put a little thing into the good old AI chatbot, created a summary of the Durham report. And here are its top 5 points about General Flynn and a summary of who should be charged. Number one, the FBI did not have a legitimate basis to investigate General Flynn, says AI chatbot. Number two, FBI officials discussed ways to get Flynn fired or prosecuted. Three, FBI officials hid key information from Flynn's defense team. That's not nice. Four, the investigation into Flynn was part of a larger effort by the FBI to undermine the Trump administration. Five, the FBI manipulated info to obtain a FISA warrant to surveil another Trump campaign advisor. By the way, that advisor is where I was Sunday. They're releasing a documentary on Carter Page called American Anarchy. Stay tuned for that. After conducting a thorough analysis of the Durham report, it is evident that there are individuals who should be indicted and prosecuted for their crimes based on common law justice, says AI chatbot. The report implicates several individuals, including former FBI Director James Comey, former CIA Director John Brennan, former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, and several others. However, it is up to the legal system to determine if and when these indictments will occur. Oh, the robots even know. But this just in, NIH restarts bat virus grant suspended 3 years ago by Trump. Revised award to Eco Health Alliance will no longer involve studies of hybrid coronaviruses. What the hell? 3 years after then-President Trump pressured the National Institute of Health, NIH, to suspend a research grant to a U.S. group studying bat coronaviruses with partners in China, the agency has restarted the award. The new four-year grant is a stripped-down version of the original grant to the EcoHealth Alliance, a nonprofit research organization in New York City, providing $576,000 before interest per year. That I added the per interest part because I said that earlier. The 2014 award included funding for controversial experiments that mix parts of a different bat viruses related to severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, the coronavirus that sparked a global outbreak in 2002-04, but quickly forgotten, and included a sub-award to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, WIV. The new award omits those studies and also imposes extensive new accounting rules on EcoHealth, which drew criticism from government auditors for its bookkeeping practices. But EcoHealth's embattled director, Peter Daszak, remember that name, people?
Oh, no, not him again.
Remember that name, people, says his group is pleased. Now we have the ability to finally get back to work, he says. Oh, goody. Can't wait for the sequel to COVID-19, part deux, The Revenge. Next article. Here's some good news to end with. New IRS numbers are in, and they look bad for Gavin Newsom, Kathy Hochul, and J.B. Pritzker. Bad for those states. Good for me. The pandemic brought with it a great deal of changes. In many cases, this includes changes in scenery. Newly released IRS data shows that in the first year of the pandemic, taxpayers fled high-tax states like New York and California and Washington for low-tax states like Florida and Texas and Tennessee, don't tell anybody, at an even faster rate than before. The IRS annually releases data on what states taxpayers move to and from. This data is delayed a few years, so the most recent release described where taxpayers moved to over the course of the first year of the pandemic in 2020. It's not a new phenomenon that New York and California has been hemorrhaging taxpayers. The previous set of data describing taxpayers' moves in 2019 found that these two states combined to lose over 248,000 households and, get ready for this, $37 billion in adjusted gross income, AGI, on net moves out after subtracting moves in. But that went into overdrive in 2020 as millions of Americans found themselves no longer expected or able to commute. In 2020, New York and California combined to lose over 300,000 households and $53 billion in AGI on net. Now, if they would just use the money in red states to fill the dang potholes, that would be nice. How Nashville and its suburb subsidized Tennessee's state government. 79 of Tennessee's 95 counties are subsidized by the remaining 16. And most of that money comes from Nashville, Davidson, and Williamson counties. The vast majority of Tennessee counties rely on Nashville, Davidson, and Williamson counties to provide the tax dollars to keep funding state operations in their counties. An analysis by the Tennessee Lookout found across Tennessee, 79 out of 95 counties generate less tax revenue than the state spends in their counties. The largest costs are direct contributions to local school systems, Tennessee's version of Medicaid, and government-funded jobs, most often at state prisons. Nashville receives between $1.22 and $1.8 billion less than it generates, according to the Lookout's analysis of 2021 tax revenue and spending data. For Williamson County, where I live, the loss ranges from $482.73 and $672.9 million. The conflict is emblematic of the growing urban-rural divide between the two political parties. Nashville is essentially an urban Democrat-led city in a state where rural Republicans have control. Duh. At least they keep our data safe, right, Steve? Billions spent on cybersecurity?
Right.
No. Sorry, no. Ex-ByteDance exec claims CCP maintained access to U.S. data. May 13, 2023. That's last week. Serene Habashian of Axios. The Chinese Communist Party maintains supreme access to data belonging to TikTok parent company ByteDance, including data stored in the U.S., a former top executive claimed in a lawsuit Friday. You, whose claim says he served as head of engineering for ByteDance's U.S. offices from August 2017 to November 2018, alleged that inside the Beijing-based company, the CCP, quote, had a special office or unit, which was sometimes referred to as the committee, unquote. The committee didn't work for ByteDance, but played a significant role in part by guiding how the company advanced core communist values, the lawsuit claims. The CCP could also access U.S. user data via a backdoor channel in the code. In an interview with the New York Times, which first reported the lawsuit, you said promoting anti-Japanese sentiment was done without hesitation. The technology giant is similarly positioned to exploit nationalistic sentiments in other countries like the United States, the lawsuit said. Told ya. Stay tuned for my thought of the day. New Life Chiropractic Brentwood is a max living health center serving the greater Nashville area since 2007. You know, the ones that were members of Max Living Sports Performance Council at the 2012 London and 2016 Rio Summer Olympic Games with the U.S. wrestling and judo teams and Tennessee NFL alumni. If Dr. Dion Kellogg can help those hardworking spines, she can help you. I know. She helped me. I'm a patient. We all have a spine. Take care of it at New Life. You'll be amazed. Check out drkellogg.maxliving.com and schedule a health consultation at front desk at newlifecoolsprings.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Coelho with Paul Davis & Associates Law Firm and Frontline Lawyers USA. You are now listening to Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast.
Welcome to my quotes for the day. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or Deezer or iHeartRadio or Rumble or anywhere you want to go and hit the subscribe button and follow us and like us and comment about us and tell all your friends about us and forward us. Everything, whatever you need to do, grow this show so I can bring you more content like we had today. And while you're there, if you read it, write a comment, I will read it. And thanks for doing it. In bowling and in life, if a person made the spares, the strikes would take care of themselves. Stephen King. Described as the king of horror, his books have sold more than 350 million copies as of 2006, and many have been adapted into films, television series, miniseries, and comic books. Super woke AF. Every bowling center should have a house pro. Don Johnson. I was a little skinny runt kid, and I decided that bowling was what I was going to do in life. Don Johnson. Johnson was raised in poverty in Wichita, Kansas, where his parents relocated when he was 6 years old. American actor, producer, and singer. He played the role of James Sonny Crockett in the 1980s television series Miami Vice, big fan, for which he won a Golden Globe and received a Primetime Emmy Award nomination. He also played in the 1990s series Nash Bridges. You can never find the right bowling ball. This one's too heavy. This one's good, but it's pink. Jim Gaffigan. You never want to be the worst bowler of the group because then everyone treats you like you have cancer. You can do it. We're praying for you. The advice starts. Use a heavier ball. Keep your arm straight. You should get a vasectomy. If you're really bad at bowling like me, they'll ask if you want that bumper up. Not that bowling is that complex anyway. You want the bumpers? We can get rid of the pins. Why don't you just take this coloring book and sit in the corner? Jim Gaffigan, American stand-up comedian, actor, writer, and producer, and very woke. Anna Mae Bullock was born on November 26, 1939, in rural Brownsville, Tennessee, to a family of sharecroppers. You know her as Tina Turner, magnetic singer of explosive power, died today at 83. Hailed in the 1960s for her dynamic performances in a husband-wife duo with Ike Turner, she became a sensation as a recording artist, often echoing her personal struggles in her songs. Widely referred to as the Queen of Rock and Roll, Tina earned 8 competitive Grammy Awards, 3 Grammy Hall of Fame prizes, and a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Trophy. She was a 2-time inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, first with Ike Turner, 1991, then as a solo artist, 2021. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Camps family, for hanging on to fun as long as possible as progress marched on. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. Rest in peace, Anna. And as always, peace in our time. Steve, let's hear Tina on the way out.
The beginning was 1960. And my first record was... There's something on my mind. Won't somebody please, please tell me what's wrong.
County Fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.